I started my working life as an Air Force apprentice, a radio apprentice. They sent us to what was then Melbourne Technical College, and we were doing a associate diploma in radio engineering. And if you passed every subject each examination time, you are allowed to continue on that course, and you graduated as a radio technician. If you failed a subject, you were put on what was called a modified technician's course, and if you ever failed another subject, you then became a radio mechanic, which was the fellow who fetched things for the radio technicians. I was fortunate enough, I got through the apprenticeship, 3 years, two of them in Melbourne, at Melbourne Tech, and then the final year at Ballarat School of Radio. Graduated as a technician, was posted back to Melbourne Telecommunications Unit, which was the base where we lived when we were apprentices, as Frognall. And I was fortunate enough to be selected for an engineering cadetship. So we then went back to what by then had become the Royal Melbourne Technical College, and did a fellowship diploma. And by the time we finished that, it was the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology.
Right.
So, but they were not conferring degrees in those days, although we did our electrical engineering externally with Melbourne University. So we were eligible to be members of the Institution of Engineers and all that sort of stuff. And I served a total of just on 15 years with the Air Force. But my last posting while I was in the Air Force was to Weapons Research Establishment, WRE. And
In
Salisbury. I was seconded to the British Ministry of Aviation, and it counted as an overseas posting, and I was thrilled to death when I saw I was going to Salisbury until I found out it was South Australia. But I was working on the air-to-ground or ground-to-air missiles, Bloodhound, VR-725, Wolfhound, working up trials instructions. But while I was there, I got a bee in my bonnet that I wanted to write a paper about payment of professional allowances to engineers in the services. Doctors got it, dentists got it, lawyers got it, all sorts of people, pharmacists, but not engineers. And so I asked one of the senior administrators in WRE, could he give me an idea if I gave him all my details and curriculum vitae, and essentially, could he tell me what sort of a job they would give me in WRE? I felt I could do that because I used to take him to the mass at Edinburgh every Friday night for prayers. So, yes, he was going to do that. And then it went on for some months, you know, and I finally said to him, what's the problem? Surely there you can find that out. He said, I'm embarrassed. I said, why? He said, well, they've told me I'm not to tell you unless you will undertake to consider seriously the offer we're about to make. I said, oh, that sounds interesting. I've got no thoughts of leaving the Air Force, but if it's a good offer, I'll consider it. So they offered me Experimental Officer Class 3, which paid exactly double what I was getting as a flight lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't a difficult decision. It upset my wife no end, because, you know, man and boy before the mast, and then suddenly leave it. And the worst thing of all was trying to work out what to put on each morning. I'd been so used to reading daily routine orders, and tomorrow you will wear dress 1A with gaiters, and but suddenly you had to make up your own mind, and it wasn't uniform. that terrified me for a couple of months, but I got used to it, and so they offered me that job at Woomera as a senior RF engineer, and I'd spent 3 very happy years at Woomera. The reason we left there, my eldest child, my daughter, was just finished her primary school there. And the primary school was very good. The kindergartens and primary schools in Woomera were excellent. But the high school was a bit rough. And so I asked to be relieved of those duties. And in fact, I almost resigned and went to work for one of the contractors, until I was visited by the superintendent of the American Projects branch, who said, "I've told them not to give you a job. I've got another one for you. You're going to Tidbinbilla as the deputy station director, and you will put together the manned space flight wing ready for Apollo." So I said, "Oh." So that's how I came to come to Tidbinbilla. But I said, "I only want to stay 3 years. I'll do that much for you, but after that, I've no desire to live in Canberra." And after 2 years, they sent me a list of all the jobs available in WRE, and I thought, I don't want to go. And I'm still here, Colin. That was not Christmas 1966 we arrived, and I don't know which Christmas we'll leave, but it's not imminent.
When you first went to WRE, were you based at Salisbury for a while, or did you go straight?
Well, 3 years while I was still in the Air Force. The interesting thing, I resigned on a weekend in October, which happened to be a long weekend in South Australia, but not in the rest of Australia. And so to keep continuity of transferring all my service benefits and everything into the public service, my first day working for the Australian Public Service, I had to take leave. Otherwise, continuity would have been lost. But that all happened and it all worked out. So I served on, and I actually served a total of Air Force plus public service 42 years, but 40 years of that was contributory service, because we didn't start paying retirement benefits until you turned 18. They were very decent out of the 3 shillings a week they gave you. They didn't take anything out of that until you turned 18. But I turned 18 and they took 1 8 pence a week out of 3 shillings.
Ooh, that's a lot.
And put it away. And I thought then, I am going to live long enough for you to regret this. And I have. I've got it all back and some more.
So when you went to Woomera, you went straight to DSS 41?
Yes, yes, yes. They were getting ready for Ranger 6 at the time. And the first couple of weeks I was there was taken up with aircraft tracks, and, you know, sort of practicing like acquisitions and all that sort of stuff.
Was that with DC-3s or something?
Helicopters mostly, yes. The Air Force had a small contingent at Woomera, and they were always happy to get flying time, you know. The only problem we had with them, they hated to see the dish fail to acquire. So I had to go beat on the heads of some of the pilots and say, "Please don't fly around and look for the dish. The dish is supposed to look for you." But they were good people. I'd known one of them at my days up at Williamtown when I was in the Air Force. I knew the other one at Laverton many years before, so I had a good rapport with the Air Force folks up there.
So when was it that you went to Woomera?
October 63.
Right. So was Bill Metier still the
Bill Metier was the station director, yes, and He had a astronomer type person, I can't think of his name, who was more or less the second in charge at the time I arrived, but he left soon after and I was sort of catapulted into I suppose you'd call him not a pseudo station director, a deputy, but whenever Bill went on leave, I got the job. So, they were good days. Bill Mattia was a very, very good antenna engineer, knew it. He was one of the people who developed the over-the-horizon radar antennas after he left.
Jindalee,
yeah. He was a very big part of the development of that big curtain array that could... Well, it didn't see round corners, it saw over hills. And I always thought, oh, I wonder why they called it Jindalee. And I found out that was an Aboriginal term for over the hill. And then when we came to Canberra, I found retirement village here was called Jindalee, which I thought was a bit cruel.
Initially, when you went to Island Lagoon, it was L-band.
Yes.
And that was for...
Certainly, the earlier missions they'd been involved in, the main one was Ranger, but they'd tracked a number of the other... early probes, but L-band was not a particularly good frequency. It was pretty noisy, and the decision had been made to move to S-band, and two sort of phases of that. The newer stations being built, which included Tidbinbilla, went directly to S-band when they were built. And that was in about 64. And then one of the Goldstone stations, the Pioneer site, had the first hybrid station, the LS conversion, they called it. Then Woomera was upgraded with the same equipment. And I took the team to America to check out that equipment for Island Lagoon soon after the Pioneer site was finished. It consisted mainly, they took the quadruped legs off. The old L-band had a focal feed. Mm-hmm. And for the S-band, the designers had decided a Cassegrain feed was much more... Mm-hmm. sensible because it was shorter, and the amount of flex you got out of the big long quadrupeds with a focal feed, it just flexed too much and it'd keep going in and out of focus. So they went to Cassegrain feed for S-band, but the Cassegrain reflector was dichroic. It was transparent to L-band and opaque to S-band, so you got a reflection of the S-band down into the S-band feed, which was then a cone in the centre of the dish, and the L-band feed was left out the other side of that dichroic reflector,
okay.
So you could work either one.
Yes.
The earlier days, the acquisition aid used to be positioned on the front end of that antenna, as well as the L-band feed,
and
the little square box. That was eventually transferred to the side of the dish. It was a funny one because it was five helical coils in an array. It was a tracking array, sum and difference type array. And it was embedded in that plastic, styrene foam that your TVs and everything comes in these days, but it was a great big block of it that had been...
So that's this one on this picture, isn't it?
That It's up there on that picture, yes.
Yeah,
I got a call from one of the technicians one Sunday morning just before, we were in the workup phase for Ranger 6. He said to me, "You better get out here, the Galahs have eaten the Accade." I said, "Don't be silly, Jack. I was at this senior mess last night. I've got a headache. And don't ring up with these silly stories on Sunday morning." He said, no, yeah, it has. Went out there and they had packed all this polystyrene foam and just thrown it up in the air, and there are these five big bed springs pointing out and sagging, looking out at the salt lake. it was a bit frightening. We got the WRE people actually, in a hurry, made up a replacement thing that would slide over and keep the coils of the helical antenna in place. But we also got a tin box made that used to slide over, so when you weren't using it, you galah proofed it. But the thing was, you had to be very careful to remember to take it off before you tried to track it. We got trapped once.